It's time for Cutting Edge Consciousness with Freeman Michaels and Barnett Bain. Thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And welcome to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with my co-host,
Barnett Bain. Can you believe that it is the middle of November?
Time is flying.
Can you believe that? It was Labor Day, and I thought, I have a few things I need to get done, and maybe I'll do them next week.
That's right.
So that list is still there.
Still there,
it's
yeah.
It's racing away.
Hey,
it's nice to be here this morning.
It's wonderful to be here. Did you see the post on our Facebook page? Of course you saw the post. Let's talk about that.
Well,
post.
That would have been a little disingenuous to ask me.
Yeah, that's right, because I know
I did see the post.
That's right.
And my goodness, that post had some charge to it. That post had some juice to it.
It definitely did. So for those of you who didn't see our Facebook page this morning, fans of ours, there was a post, and I won't say who it's from because actually, Barnett, you took it down. I left it there. I thought, wow, that's interesting.
I got reactive, and then after I took it down, I thought, wow, why did I get so reactive? I took it down before I even sat with it for a while, so it's a really nice whisper about slowing down for the day. But continue.
No, that's good. I mean, that's actually really important that, you know, for you, it really triggered something. For me, it was interesting. But in really basic terms, this was a very well-meaning fan of the show, perhaps, someone who comes to our page, and they have come before, and they posted something about eating animals and it being barbaric, and they had a link to a video from, I think, the Humane Society. But it was really thick with a kind of
an energy that very much separated people out to the us and the them and the me's and the you's and very, very dramatic exhibit A of some of the territory we're going to discuss today.
Well, this is actually important because, you know, we have brought this up before. In fact, we had the show, what was the name of that show? Caught Up in the Cause.
The Dingoes.
Yes, the one about the man who was supporting.
You ought to respond to that email by posting that. It would be a
idea. Yeah, because we had the show about getting caught up in a cause. But the reason I think it's important today, because our guest today would be a perfect person to
bring this
up with.
What an interesting thing. I think we should toss that to somebody that we just happen to have.
That's right.
Do you remember that Woody Allen movie? I think it was Annie Hall, and Woody is standing in line at a queue in a cinema, and he's having a conversation, and somebody in front is talking about semiotics and signs and meaning in the cinema, and Woody's getting all hot and flustered, and suddenly he says, "That's nonsense. You don't know a thing about Marshall McLuhan." And he turns, and Marshall McLuhan walks on and
great.
Says, "Woody is right. You don't know anything about my work at all."
You would be a filmmaker, wouldn't you? You'd love that as a filmmaker. How many people misinterpreted what Dreams May Come or any of the films you've made?
Yeah. Well, talking about the world as a mirror.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if Byron Katie was with us
that
and we
be
could
the
toss
perfect
it?
Person to
we
toss
could
it to.
Toss it to
That's right.
Byron Katie. Would Can you imagine that?
That would be fantastic.
Is there anybody on the line with us now?
You know, I'm here.
Oh my goodness!
I'm
here, it's Byron Katie. Well, Katie, good morning.
What are you up to? Good morning.
We're having a great time. We're up to enjoying ourselves and loving and learning and sharing the whole thing with fantastic people.
Mm.
And we are so glad you're with us.
Thank you. It's my privilege.
For the two or three people, the two or three listeners who have yet to discover Byron Katie. Katie experienced what she calls waking up to reality in the mid-80s, and since then she has introduced the work to people all over the world. And she is the author of many best-selling books, including Loving What Is, A Thousand Names for Joy. And we are very, very excited to have her, to have you with us here today. So welcome to Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Thank you. So you pulled the you pulled the Facebook comment.
Barnett said he pulled it. Yeah, I did. In retrospect, I'm going to, having turned it around, I realize it was a fantastic...
Which is an expression that you
we'll,
use,
we'll
Katie.
Come back,
yeah,
we'll
yeah,
come
course.
Back around to
yep.
it. It is a fantastic. It was a fantastic gift to me, an opportunity to see my own reactivity, and
isn't that it?
Whew, yeah.
And to know that that's a good thing.
It's a great thing. I feel
that's what grows you. I mean, that's why the post was there in the first place. It had to be.
Yeah. Well, it was perfect, and
the opportunity. Let me jump in here because I think the opportunity. And this is really going to be the heart of the matter: is to own our own reactivity and own the reflection. There's something that you have said, Katie, that I want to repeat because it really moved me when I heard it. You said victims, let me think how you worded this, something about people with
violence.
Victims are violent people.
Yes, mm-hmm. That there's a quality, and having played the victim a lot in my own personal life, I recognize the underlying rage that I personally looked for opportunities to project onto, causes or whatever, which really diminished whatever was valid or valuable in that particular cause, because it was really me finding, unfortunately, an outlet, maybe not the most appropriate outlet, for this part inside of me that felt victimized. Let's start there.
Yeah, that part inside of you that hasn't really looked to itself to, in my terms, to see, is it true?
Mm.
And to even question, I'm a victim, and the mind would give us every reason to believe that it's true. Through images and assumptions and concepts, we're bombarded so that we keep our position on that. And so I'm a victim. Is it true? And then to notice how I react when I believe the thought that I'm a victim. My goodness, you know, it's like I'm happy. I'm happy-go-lucky in this moment. And then someone walks in and a family member and looks at me, and all of a sudden I take on that victim, you know, can feel my shoulders slump and my, you know, my head drops, and, you know, if maybe I have the thought I'm coming down with the flu, well, now I look like I've got it. Mm. It's, you know, it's how we react and what happens when we believe the thought. And then we begin to, as you spoke to earlier, we begin to, we have a cause.
That's right. And something to attach it to.
Oh, we have to bring everyone into that cause. And if anyone says, oh, you don't really have the flu, you look okay to me, well, all of a sudden, they're not a part of your cause. You know, there's us. Those are the ones that agree with me. And then there's those other people that just don't understand. And, you know, it really is. Victims are violent people. We oppose the people that oppose us, and we're just caught in a dilemma. And then to notice who we would be without the thought.
That's the gift. That's the gift. That's the beauty.
It is. You know, and then it's revealed to me, you know, prior to that person walking into the room, I was fine, that, you know, until I took up my cause.
Well, there's something that blossoms from all of this, and I know that, well, let me reframe it this way. We talk on this program a great deal about compassion, and we think of it in a number of ways. One is an active caring that is born out of personal experience, often sorrow. And your personal story totally illustrates that. So would you care to share a bit of that with our audience? What happened to you that led to your discovery of the work and of these insights?
You know, I would, and before I leave that other thing just for a moment, you know, in that fourth question, you know, who would I be without the thought I'm a victim? And compassion just naturally shows up there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, compassion toward myself and those that I have led, you know, astray with, you know, suffering as a result of my own delusions, and in that such a state of gratitude that I'm able to see it, make amends, start over, less delusional.
But it blooms from inside out. We can't do this sort of premature compassion syndrome, where suddenly we kind of try it on like a new pair of like a new shirt. It is something that we discover, and both we discover and discovers us. Isn't that right?
Yeah, it's enlightenment. I'm enlightened to where I am off within myself. You know, what I'm thinking and believing about me, about you, about the world, that really isn't true for me. Mm-hmm. I'm simply believing it because, you know, all those images in my head give me false proof. So, you know, the work wakes us up. And to go back, as you said earlier, in the mid-80s, I was lying on a floor because I was so full of self-loathing. I didn't believe I even deserved a bed to sleep on. And so I slept beside my bed on the floor night after night. And one particular morning, actually, a cockroach crawled over my foot. I was dead asleep. It woke me up in two ways. I woke up like I had done every morning of my life. And I also woke up to reality. I could see in that moment that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered. Mm. But when I questioned my thoughts, I didn't suffer. And I've come to see that this is true for every human being. So I began to offer the simple way of meditation, the simple way of inquiry to the world. And you know, it's not for everyone. It's inquiry. It does take some stillness. But, you know, when we have a mind that really wants to know, it's a lot of fun. Or when we're depressed and feel there's no way out, it also, you know, it really, really breaks the spell. It breaks the dream. And it works for everyone whose mind is open to it.
And whose heart is open to it. It's certainly not for the faint of heart to be able to look, to stare into the looking glass and to take ownership of what is staring back.
But the piece I think that's really one of the pieces that's important though, Barnett, is this spaciousness of the compassion, and that's the piece I really appreciate about the work. And when I say the work, I'm referring for the audience members who are listening to your process, Katie, called The Work, which again is these four questions, which we can go over in a minute. But the idea that it's an opening, a space, and you know what comes to mind? It's a quote by Viktor Frankl, who of course wrote Man's Search for Meaning, and he says that in the space between stimulus and response, in the ability to create that space, is the freedom to choose our response. And that's the spaciousness that I find in the work. It involves a kind of inquiry is the language, of course, but it's an observation. That's the quality of it, where we separate a little bit from the stimuli. So we're not just reacting in the world, and we begin to have a choice.
Yeah, it's an intelligent, it gives us that an opening to that intelligent way of seeing that benefits everyone.
Beautiful.
And it's, you know, if someone says, for example, Katie, I don't care about you. I don't care about you at all. You know, I experience immediately compassion because I understand if I believed about me what they believe about me, I would see me the same way they see me. So what is there to forgive? Nothing. But I recall believing thoughts like that about myself and about others. And the pain of that, the separation of that, and that's where the compassion comes in. You know, it's that it's not an enemy, that is a friend. And I don't have to teach them that I'm a wonderful person. Compassion is, you know, and the gratitude that comes with that, it makes us, doesn't it? Don't we become really clear listeners, really, really quieter. You know, there's an understanding there, you know, when we're in the face of the pain that we know so well, experienced in others, there's no sadness in it. It's very strange. It's just understanding, compassion, and that sense of gratitude that we have outgrown it, and that we're not, the gratitude that we're not trying to convince other people that they're wrong. You know, that they're wrong.
Mm. This compassion, this gratitude that folds into it or blossoms out of it, it's almost as though it holds the boundaries, it holds our boundaries for love to give and to receive.
Yeah, and in a kind of infinite way, in a kind of unlimited way, which is really space again.
Mm.
Like boundaries, I see as an act of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So to, you know, what you said, and in that spaciousness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's such a generous and generative relationship with the pain. Again, a quote that comes to mind, the Dalai Lama, I think it's the Dalai Lama that said it, that pain is part of life, but suffering is optional. And he goes on, and I'm paraphrasing, to basically say it's our thoughts that it ought to be different that are causing the suffering.
Yeah, the war with reality.
Yes.
Yeah, and I would go a step further and say that even pain is a projection of mind.
Yes.
And we're, you know, everyone is not quite that, you know, as a human race, we're not quite that evolved. But to my mind, yes, we are. It's possible.
That's exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
That we're even having the discussion, that we're even here in these bodies having this discussion, speaks to our readiness and our willingness and our ability to choose. It seems
truly, it is the one mind realizing itself, waking up to reality. And even though we appear to be a human race, there are no new stressful thoughts. They're all recycled within us. There's nothing new. And we only need to look at history to see that it is really one mind identified differently in areas, but not separate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bodies are separate. Minds are not.
Again, one of the generosities of the offer of the work, the offer of what you do, Katie, is it's an opportunity to unwind a lot of what we're talking about, these cycles that get us caught in almost like reruns of our history. They keep playing out and keep playing out.
Structured thinking, structured imagining, structured feeling.
And pattern behavior, pattern ways that we repeat and replay the same tape, the same tape loop again and again and again.
As long as we're believing these stressful thoughts, and there are no new stressful thoughts again, but as long as we're believing these stressful thoughts, our actions have to be the same.
Right.
We try to change our actions, but we're not evolving as let's say, in the apparent individual until that mind is, let's say, evolving, enlightening itself. The behavior just goes over and over and over like Groundhog Day.
It's so
we're moving around the furniture, the deck chairs on the Titanic, instead of putting away the deck chairs and riding the ship,
as it were.
Switching boats.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we're right back to where we started. Where is it from again?
Yeah, and the power of the offer, again, is that when we take ownership of what's going on, we end the cycles. One of the things that I love that you say, and I'm a huge fan of yours, by the way, if you haven't caught on already, is we end the war. Mm-hmm. Because one of the first sort of components of war is the defensive quality, where we take on a defense and we're off. And so we need to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want you to speak to that, because that's one of my favorite pieces of your work, how we look at our own defenses and how we recognize that begins the cycle. So we need to take a quick break.
We'll be right back after a word. I love how they say that. I'm going to say that. After a word from our sponsors, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we're back on Cutting Edge Consciousness. This is Barnett Bain with my co-host, Freeman Michael, and our guest, our special guest, Byron Katie. Now, before we broke, you were about to pose a question to Katie, so I will throw it to you.
Well, one of the things that Katie says that I think is really important is the first that defense is the first step in war. And I want to speak...
That's juicy.
It's juicy. I want you, Katie, to speak to that, because that's a big one for folks to swallow.
You know, it is, and it's so painful. And it's actually, defense is the first act of war.
First
you know,
act.
That action of war. So let's say, again, someone says, Katie, you did it wrong.
Well, Katie, let me jump in for a second. Let's ground it in a very hot and controversial context right
okay,
now.
Okay, good.
So if you would ground this in the context of the, let's say, the Occupy Wall Street movement,
mm-hmm.
that might be very revealing.
Okay, so let's say I show up I'm one of the occupiers,
mm-hmm.
and I have a family member that says, Katie, what are you doing? You know, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, how dare you say that? How can you be so cold? You're one of the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand where I'm coming from. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is what I call the old way, the old paradigm. Okay. The asleep ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So same scenario. My family member says, Katie, what are you doing as one of those occupiers? You are so wrong. And I stop to consider that.
Mm.
Well, let's see. I think I'm right. I've done my homework. Maybe they know something I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't have too much information. So I ask that person, you know, you could be right, so where am I off? Where am I wrong? Because I really want to know. Okay? So there's no war, is there?
Mm. Mm.
Okay? There is no war. Zero. The other way, Katie, you're one of those occupiers. You know, you are wrong in what you're doing. And I say, you know, and they, with that tone of voice, and I say, how dare you? How can you say that to me? You are blotted up. Okay, who started the war?
Mm.
I started it. I am always the cause of war or peace. No one starts the war in my life. In my home, only one person starts the war. And if I step into defense, then that's where the war begins. I'm just so aware of it. And I invite your listeners, please don't believe me. Just test it for yourself. An open mind is infinite. It grows. It's where enlightenment comes from. People who say, you know, I really want to know the truth. You know, I'm really a seeker. Oh, really?
Hmm.
Oh, really? When someone comes at you with both barrels and what you perceive to be criticism, notice your reaction. Notice who starts the war. And notice how your mind will want to say, well, they accused me first. Oh, really? I haven't been criticized in 26 years, and I'm very open.
Hmm. That's a relief. It's such a generous offer. I understand it's hard. I mean, it's hard for me sometimes to take personal ownership.
Well, it is, because denial is that strong.
Yeah, it is.
But if someone comes at me and I begin to defend, I'm defending that denial that is living within me. It's like, how dare you? You don't know me. Well, I don't know me very well. If I really knew me, if I really understood my heart, I would not attack.
Yeah.
And defense is attack.
Hmm. You've opened a gold mine here that I want to unpack a little bit further. There is so much energy being tossed around around this Occupy Wall Street, and on the other side of the spectrum, the Tea Party, which I personally believe are two expressions of the same crisis of meaning and mattering and dignity. However, in both cases, there is this opportunity to for all parties to discover more of who they really are and to own some of the dissension that they're projecting onto other, the enemies that we are making, to really to kind of make peace with that and to own some of the dissension and rife that may be being expressed in judgment or against the self or against about how they hold these kinds of conflicts and inequities in their own being. Could you speak of maybe we'll layer the questions on it.
If the 1% listen to the 99% and the 99% listen to the 1%, we're all growing. And what does that leave? You know, it leaves 100% finding solutions.
Yes.
But that is a fearless state of mind. That is a state of mind that is open, as you said earlier, to looking at oneself.
It's almost as if the catchphrase, take everything personally. I mean, I know it's the opposite of what so many people have said, but what I hear is what you're saying is take everything personally. Even the things that seem preposterous, take them in and consider them as opposed to locking into, and habitually, you know, this defensive stance.
The story.
There's an offer.
We're enamored of our story.
Yeah, there's an offer, though. There's an offer in conflict. There's an offer in all of this if we are willing to own it.
Yes, or at least be open to it.
Right.
And then when we see that that person is right, tears can come out of that as the ego just dies.
Melting, yeah.
This identity of I am the one that knows.
Mm.
I am right, you are wrong. I mean, who am I? You know, if I am open to that, who am I? It leaves that question unanswered, and it leaves the heart to live it out.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
And this is for the true seeker, and I really, you know, we've about, it appears, used this planet up. I mean, this is, it's graduation time.
Yeah.
And my invitation to the world is, you know, can we be happy? Like, if you look at the 99% and you don't have a job, your children are hungry, you're hungry, you're desperate, okay, if you look at yourself when you did have the money, were you happy?
Wonderful.
And yeah. And so my position is let's be awake, and to use that word happiness, it means something different to all of us, you know, by definition, but to be happy wherever we are, that is possible. But when we are fearful, we are violent, and as we said earlier, victims, and, you know, I think the point being here, we're miserable when we're fed, and we're miserable when we're not fed, and we have excuses for misery out of both situations. So to question the mind is to free oneself in all situations where we are freed up to just, you know, how can I help? How can I serve? Mm. And a whole other world it's a whole other paradigm.
There's a whole bunch of
possibilities. It really is a total systemic, it's a completely different dance floor
until we get it, you know, I'm hungry, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Because you have food and you're not sharing it with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason that I'm hungry. You are not sharing with me. Well, you know, there's got to be another way because, you know, people have been hungry since in all the history of civilization that we're aware of. Nothing has changed. It's not just the 99%. You know, the 1% fear hunger as well.
And have a different relational, there's a different, it's a little linear, but I use this term for myself of attention assets. There's maybe just a slightly different, there's a different balance of the ratios of attention that's being put into my my fear and my anger story in one or another areas.
But it's the same paradigm. It's well, the same it's, lack and scarcity paradigm.
It's not exact. It's not exactly. I mean, it's where the degree to which I feed a particular place is the degree to which I'm not owning my own, that it's a reflection of my own belief structure and my own energy structure. So there is a this
and
freedom of ownership.
Positive or negative?
Yes, either positive or negative.
Right.
It's such a
the imbalance.
The freedom is in the owning of it, and the whole all the reactivity of me deleting that post. If I had put the clutch in for a moment and processed the allowed myself to experience the feeling of it, I would have at least, I may not have made the choice, but I would have had an opportunity to slow it down to make a choice. To downshift for a second.
And I would ask you, too, do you make that choice or does it just happen in your head and then we claim it?
Both are true. I mean, it's a little more empowered if I slow it down at least initially to make the choice so it's not a default choice, it's not a habituated choice, and I can...
You can slow it down enough to notice the choice comes.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
That's that space, again, between stimulus and response. There's the ability
slow
to choose.
It has to be slowed
down. And the
down.
Part of me that's doing the choosing is really important, that there's a part of me that I nurture and that I grow. You don't know this, Katie, but our listeners do, that I've started a hugging practice, a practice of hugging more. And it's a very conscious expression of my desire to create more closeness, more connection, and so forth. It's a way of expressing it consciously. And that awareness, that sort of focus of where I want to put my attention has increased the quality of my life dramatically.
Oh, that is amazing. You know, I was when I first found this work, I used to go out to the desert a lot and just to be alone, be still, and listen. And, you know, I was going to... get away from the world and all of the noise, but it followed me. It was all in my head.
Right, that's beautiful. That's
so, we could fire ourselves out into space, but we're taking
me.
It with us.
The tin cans come banging behind us.
I met the world. Where was it? Within me. So I came across this little market in the desert, and I walked in to get an apple, and there was this old desert lady standing there, and she was very large, and she was, her skin looked like a desert bed, you know, with all of the crevices and everything from dirt and sun, and I walked up to her and I said, "Would you hold me, please?" And she dropped all of these bags, put her arms around me. She began to just envelop me and rock me, and she started singing me a lullaby. Mm. And I you know, if I want a hug, unlike you, I ask.
Mm.
And oh my goodness! And then to take it in and receive that, oh my goodness, it's quite a thing. So I am for your cause. I know the power of that, and oh, it does change us, doesn't it? We meet the world.
Absolutely. And it's mysterious. It's mysterious. So further to that, we only have a few minutes left, and I've been saving this question for you. You're married to a poet, Stephen Mitchell, mm-hmm. wonderful poet. What is your perspective on the relationship of creativity and the mystery?
My mind is the creator, and the mystery I don't really look to. I experience more of a sense of gratitude that takes me.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And when you watch Stephen grapple with.
I marvel.
You're marveling at that energy of marvel.
Oh,
is to me the energy of the muses of Thalia, the innocence and humor, Thalia rather, the innocence of the muse of innocence and good humor and wonder. And I'm curious to the degree that every artist, I'm sure that Stephen has a ritualized practice in order to disengage himself from that kind of habituated mind in order to be open for new, something new. And as the receiver and the generator of the work, you also have your own experience of being very intimate with what is off trail.
You know, we wake up in the morning and we'll have tea, a little breakfast together, and he is just like a little boy, just so happy, and he just goes straight away to his studio. It is his passion. He is a writer with every cell. We meet again for lunch, and then he goes off like this little boy again. He's 68, I think, 69, and back to his studio. And then maybe 4 or 5 o'clock, he comes in. We have dinner. This is when I'm not traveling, of course. And when I'm gone, it's the same schedule for him. Mm. But he loves, I think, what we both have, that we love to be alone with ourselves. And speaking for myself, I love everything I think. And he loves, you know, he is all about literature. Maybe he is, like right now, he is, he's translating the Odyssey. And because he's just, his Iliad has just been published. And so he has, you know, all of these books in front of him and all these different languages showing him from all of these creative minds on what is to come through him to give in the English language people the finest and closest thing to Homer that he could possibly give.
He's like an explorer.
Mm-hmm.
He's just
discoverer.
Because the idea of trying to discover, not even trying, I mean, forget me, it's not a trying, it's a commitment to a process of discovery.
Yes, he falls in love, in his words, he falls in love with these with this consciousness, like
yes.
Job and Rilke, and you know, on and on, and he brings them to those of us that speak English, but he has to fall in love with that consciousness first. That's how
he's the bridge.
That's how he does it.
He's the bridge. He's the next guy we got to get on the show.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. He's the bridge, and in this way,
we'll bring him on too.
In this way, he models another perspective of what we are all attempting to do. At least most of the listeners to this show is to bridge from what we are not quite in touch with to where we can have ownership and a sense of intimacy of what is beautiful and good and true in us. So I wonder if you will both consider coming on together.
That would be delightful.
Oh, he had so much fun, and I'm sure he would. You know, I wouldn't even have to twist his arm. All I have to say is, honey, this was so much fun.
That's beautiful.
We would love to have you on, maybe in studio together, so that we could go into a bit of what relationship is and what passion is. What is passion is vis-a-vis its expression in the arts and in marriages and in committed relationships. But we've run out of time,
yes,
Katie.
Yes, this is the unfortunate
part.
There's
never enough time. We have to learn how to stretch time a little bit.
We do. That's one of my next tricks. But before we let you go, Katie, I want to let folks know, I know that you're going to be speaking in Westlake Village soon. And for our audience in Ventura and Northern L.A. County, that's an opportunity. So that's on December 9th for folks who want to check that out. It's the Center for Spiritual Living.
And there is the No Body.
Right. And then in April, there's the No Body event on the East Coast. Would you tell us about that before you leave us?
Well, the No Body is I don't know a more powerful event anywhere. It's extremely radical. Anyone with an open mind can do it, and that is at Kripalu. And then I have a 9-day school for the work that I do 3 and 4 times a year, and other events. And most importantly, the work is always free. At thework.com. Everything I have that has any value is there, no charge. And therefore, anyone open to this the wondrous being and heart that we all really are.
You are so generous and so gracious, and we are tremendously grateful that you took the time today, Katie, to spend it with us.
Thank you. And it's not just because this is so much fun that I'm delighted, but so much of my yes was the work that you do. And thank you both.
Bless you.
Thank you.
And for those of you listening, please stay tuned, because we'll be right back here on Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with my co-host, Barnett Bain.
Well, that was quite an experience.
She's just a beautiful human being.
I feel exhilarated.
Yeah.
That was really a wonderful conversation. I cannot wait to do it again. And at the same time, I'm fully satisfied with where we are now. Just
that's
throw
right.
that out, Gabe, because
that's right.
when Katie's listening to this, I don't want to for 1 second suggest I'm too far out of the moment.
Oh, there
that
so
was really wonderful.
Much in that very rich, very generous conversation to speak about. But I think the and it's a, I don't know who the heck said it, and maybe it doesn't matter, but the quote, you don't have to believe everything you think. I had a bumper sticker.
I was a bumper sticker.
I did.
I have another take on that.
Go ahead, tell me.
Katie invited listeners
mm-hmm.
to be skeptical of what she had to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will second that. Be skeptical and be willing to be skeptical of your skepticism.
That's great. That is fantastic. I love it. Be skeptical and be willing to be skeptical of your skepticism.
Be skeptical of your skepticism.
We've spoken about this idea of holding paradox, of dynamic complexity, where lots of things can be true at the same time,
yeah.
and we don't necessarily have to decide. We can hold them all in our consciousness and make choices. And at first, that's terrifying. I mean, this is... Our own evolution is so developmental, as you and I have said many times. There's sort of points in time where it's not possible to see beyond, you know, the expression schema, our own schema, our own worldview. And as we're younger, of course, that's appropriate. But the more dimensional our experience becomes, the more we create that kind of space that Katie was talking about, where we can hold other people's opinions without having to make them right or wrong or choose, that we can hold lots of different ideas at the same time and navigate them in a graceful way.
It's a
way.
Courtliness.
Yeah.
It's a civility. We don't have really models for it. I think that might be one of the attractions, the allure of things like the Arthurian legends and the Round Table, this kind of chivalry, the ability to sit within a sense of equality in egalitarian spirit and hear a view contrary to yours with enough graciousness and capacity to entertain it. And the discipline to put the clutch in on your own position.
Habituated
to be fully present,
pattern of defensiveness.
Fully present with someone. We don't see that modeled. We certainly don't see it in our media and in our political discourse.
No. We see the act of war. We see the defensive, which she calls defensive,
yeah.
an act of war. I mean, that is just tremendous language. I'm going to take that and repeat that with all due credit to Byron Katie many times, because it's true. When I lock into that defensiveness immediately, I mean, I can tell you, I know the neurochemistry. I mean, I know that cortisol is shooting off, and I know that, you know, my perspective is narrowing when I'm in that defensive state from a scientific standpoint. But I know it from a feeling standpoint. All manner of complexity shuts down. I become myopic. I can't see, you know, I can't see any other perspective. I've experienced that. And so it's such a beautiful thing to recognize that that's an act of war. And if I want peace in my life,
mm-hmm.
I have to really be diligent and disciplined at owning that and unwinding that enough, creating enough space for me
owning
to see
it,
other people's sides.
Owning it and forgiving it.
That
and
compassion
being willing
piece.
To be the willingness to release it and the willingness to be helped in the release of it. I see it reflected so often, and I want to kind of get a charge up, you know, watching, especially in these political seasons when you watch the pundits left and right, and one doesn't ever listen to the other.
I know.
And you see
it's
that
painful.
as one is talking, you can see the other one formulating their talking points, and I get charged. And now it's becoming a yoga for me. I watch this.
That's beautiful.
And I do a dance, an internal dance of finding the razor's edge, the tension. I feel the push-pull of the tension of my surrender to my conditioning, getting on the game board. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
This is so contrarian. This is so wrong. And the ownership of that is a reflection of my own seesaw, back and forth, do-si-do. And it is a huge transformational energy for me. It's cut down a lot on my, you wouldn't notice it here, but we're on radio, folks. This is about speaking. But it's cut down. You said it the other night. We were having dinner, and you said, wow, you speak a lot less.
That was funny with your wife. Well, your wife, our wives were talking.
It has reduced.
Yeah, the desire to jump in the right and be smart.
Not so much the desire, but it has reduced the need to have something to say. I'm a little bit more observant of the energies inside that want to have something to say or want to take a position.
Yeah.
And I love them.
I love them.
They don't have to drive my car.
No, you love the guy that deleted the post this morning.
I love that guy. I love them. But,
yeah.
You know, I can feel the part that wants to get self-judging or wants to judge.
No, of course.
I love him. I make space for him at where he is in his own arrested development.
Right.
That's appropriate behavior, and I can love it. But I'm not giving him the keys to my car.
Yeah. No, it's a great consciousness. It's such a valuable commitment to really owning as much as we can possibly own, and understand that's the place.
It's a practice.
Of personal
it's a practice.
Power. It is a practice.
Practice is a practice. And we develop excellence. We develop mastery. You say that word, people immediately get triggered. I get triggered. Mastery, who am I, as Marianne says, who am I to have something to share that is beautiful, good, and true? Who am I? Who am I to claim authority?
And Marianne, of course, says, who are you not to?
Who am I not to?
That it's an obligation to step into our own.
Well, it's an opportunity.
I don't want to be the heavy trip, but I feel at this point there's an imperative for me personally to keep inviting in more. I have made that commitment in my life, and it's made all the difference. And I'm grateful to Byron Katie because she's been a part of that process.
Is it really imperative, or is it a choice? Is it a preference?
You're gonna nail me on this one. Well, you know, look.
Hey, you can't go there 10 minutes after Katie gets on the phone.
Look, I really feel like for me,
it's a choice.
Yeah, it is a choice, but look, it's a gut check, because I am constantly having experiences come up in my life that urge me to go deeper, that nudge me to go deeper.
Yeah, one which feels better. I love when, I think it's the, is it the third question? How would it be?
How would your life look
if you dropped that thought?
Yeah, yeah.
But we have to own the thought before. You can't drop something. You cannot something that you can't.
Well, there's an
let
inquiry.
Go of something that you don't own.
There's an inquiry process. I mean, that's the point of the inquiry, is we become intimate with all these parts of us that leap up and leak out in various ways, including our self-righteous defensive.
I have found there is, I think we're running out of time, right?
Yeah,
so I'm
going
to speak very, very quickly. But I have found vis-a-vis the work.
Yeah.
That I also have to be vigilant of my desire to make it mechanical, and that I know. Is this really true? No, it's not. I mean,
right.
That it really requires the a focus, the attention, and the humility to make it fresh and new every time, so that those answers that I scratch for are authentic and are at the edge of what is true for me in that moment, and that I don't simply begin to get mechanical about moving through the process.
I'll tell you what's true for me. We've run out of time.
Is that really true? Because we could take it to...
Right.
I don't see anybody
Tell the station we're going to go for another hour. Billy the Brain, move over.
Billy the Brain can move over.
No, he can't. And so with that, we need to say goodbye. But listen, we're so grateful that you tuned in today to Cutting Edge Consciousness.
We will see you back here next week.
Yes, and if you enjoy the show, please share it with friends and keep coming back, too.
You can also check us out on our Facebook page, www.cuttingedgeconsciousness.com.
That's
our webpage. I was recovering. Our Facebook page and our webpage. Check us out all over the place. And we appreciate your listenership.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.